Wow. We're doing this again. Fuck. We're doing
this again. He's gone.
The last one you just started yelling. You're like, welcome back!
Fucking listen up!
Yeah, welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast, guys. Jonesy?
Yep, we got heaps of topics. We talk about sledging on the golf course, how you can't shake Cam Meyer. But George talks about coming back from Germany. He's overcultured. Billy just keeps waffling on. Enjoy.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in the basketball chair.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment, I think.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
We're going to need to get some more qualified guests on this, shall we?
I made an amateur mistake this morning, boys. Amateur mistake.
It sounds like a normal morning.
Number one rule. Now, they're normally done at night, the mistakes, but this morning the mistake was made. Number one rule of wake-ups. If you get woken up early, for whatever reason, today was a drug test, 2 hours before my alarm, got up, did the drug test, made the amateur mistake of going back to sleep afterwards.
Oh, yeah. You woken up worse.
Can't do that. Woke up worse. You think, extra hour of sleep will help, but it doesn't.
Sometimes it's like how you wake up is a bit of a lottery. Like, and if you get it good the first time, like if you've woken up all right the first time, don't take another dip from the pot. You know what I mean? Like you already just
don't spin the wheel again. You've already landed
the red. Exactly. I'm all right with this. Yeah. It's early, but I'm okay. Yeah. I'm not sideways. Whereas I had the same wake up. I had the same alarm as you this morning, but the difference being I got back from Deutschland Tour at 2 a.m. this morning. And she's such a nice lady that came around.
She's lovely.
And I just don't say anything. It's one of those situations where I'm fuming because I reckon I had 4 hours sleep. And then she's there bubbly, like, oh, bon dia. And I'm sitting there like, fucking just want to fucking, you know, really just fuming away. But I'm just going, bon dia. And then like, I've got like suitcases all through the lounge and shit, like clearly a trail of destruction where I got home. Like my clothes are still on the floor, like tinkered. And then, one of the questions she asks for the doping control is, you know, have you had 3 days of consecutive competition? I was like, yeah, well, clearly, you know, I just got back from Germany tour. She's like, oh, no, really? Because they obviously don't know. So they got no idea that you got home at 2 a.m. So she bumps in at 7 a.m, 6:30, bright and sparky. And you want them to be like, it's what they're doing is great. And They don't get to choose what time they come, but fuck, it winds you up.
Oh yeah,
we've spoken about this before, but being a drug tester is like being a parking inspector. Like it's just one of those hated jobs. Like I'd hate it because you're never greeted with like, "Hey, what's happening? Thanks for rolling up. Awesome."
Is it true that with parking fines, if you're fined by the local council, then you need to pay it? But if you're fined by like one of those private entities, you don't actually have to pay it?
Well, ask George about fines. He knows all about them.
I know how not to pay them and turn a 50 euro speeding ticket into 3,000 pretty quickly.
Well, I still haven't got that speeding fine from France. So I think it went to my old address in Sales. So I need to hunt that down. I think that's starting to accumulate.
Don't go looking for them.
Don't go to France.
Just go to Inuit or Ostrich. Yeah. It's the ones that bury their head in the sand.
Well, that's my old man's nickname, Emu. And he's in Sale. So get Emu get it.
Couldn't have gone to a better place.
I was thinking, how did you know that information? I was like, what's George been doing? Snooping around text messages. news, fellas?
Well, I got back from Germany, as we talked about. I tell you what, I haven't spent much time in Germany before. I've spent I think it's the least visited country in my books and in all of like the common countries we go to in Europe. I think I've been there once before in my life. And I couldn't believe how much Germany is like a parody of Germany. It's like, you know how you would imagine like in New Zealand, a German restaurant opens and they're all like wearing lederhosen and with the big steins of beer. And it's almost like taking the piss out of Germany. Germany is actually like that. Like they lean into being German so hard. You know,
they're trying so hard to be Germany. Germany is trying so hard to be German.
And the whole time I was like, it's like they're taking the piss out of themselves. Every town I'd go there and be like this big lady up on stage with like, you know, with the plaques and stuff, and you know, Goedemorgen, very cheery, and you just like
tone it down, love. Be neutral.
And after a while, it occurred to me what was happening. They are running
countries with culture.
Yeah, no, you know what they're doing? They're running a massive distraction. They're going, this is Germany. Forget about the 40s. Forget about the. I reckon that's what they're doing. They're just running a huge diversion plan. We're all looking at the left hand to forget about the right hook that happened, you know, 70 years ago. So I just couldn't, everywhere I looked, I was like, you couldn't get more German, and I couldn't keep a straight face. I mean, I'm sitting at breakfast and you just, who literally gets up and puts Lederhosen on and comes to breakfast, you know, like
Germans, they love
exactly,
it.
With tall socks and little khaki.
Well, it's like Australia's like that. Like, you go to the Melbourne airport, we're just wearing Bintang singlets, stubbies, thongs. We don't give a shit.
No, but it would be like Crocodile Dundee greeting you at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
Getting out of the, getting your luggage, call out a knife. You know, like.
It's
pretty. I haven't spent much time in Germany. Speaking of Germany, isn't the Oktoberfest is kicking off soon? We should go there.
But I never understood what is in September.
Yeah.
But I've heard stories of that. Even I've heard stories from like almost professional drunks that have been Oktoberfest.
Is that what they call alcoholics these days? Professional drunks?
No. I've had mates that, you know, would have a beer on their cornflakes.
Are you an alcoholic? No, I'm a professional drunk.
Yeah, but they've been to Oktoberfest and they're like, it's too much. It is literally too much. Like, they've got some beer halls
where if you, so there's this whole thing about like, if you stand on the table, you have to finish your stein. So how big is a stein? Must be like a liter. Did they invent the metric system? Okay.
I think so. So it all started with beer and it was that one liter stein. They said, that's what we're going to call a liter.
So I hear stories about if you stand up, and you don't finish you stand on the table, everyone has to like give you their attention and like clap you or whatever. And if you don't finish the stein, you're like kicked out. Like if you're going to go to the effort of standing up and you don't nick it all, you're out.
And there's some sort of rule where you have to drink a stein within every 90 minutes or something. Like, you know, you've got to go at some pace. Mm. Like, you know, back in the day in Toronto, I mean, that was just a warm up. But there, you know, like there's pressure.
I might have Oktoberfest be over in 90 minutes. I'll be gone. Yeah. I'll go to Germany for 90 minutes, come home.
I think people, when you go to Oktoberfest, it's like a lockout period at a nightclub, you know, like 1 a.m. or something. So, like, you're either on or you're out. It's like you walk in day one of Oktoberfest, you don't leave until Oktoberfest is over. You go through phases. But you just find somewhere to put your head and have a sleep.
But I reckon it's one of those events that it'd be like for males, there'd be an element of pride. Like if I went to Oktoberfest, I'd want to train for it. You know, I'd want to have two or three benders a week just to get piss fit and then go in red hot. Because if you went in there and you go, geez, I haven't had a beer for about 8 weeks, you got no chance.
Oh, mate, that's me right now. I've been on the straight and narrow since like January. I think because what happened was every time I had like a penciled in holiday this year, just before it, I'd get massively sick or get COVID or something. And that would be like, oh, that's your holiday, mate. Better start training again. And you go, well, I didn't really have a holiday. I just stayed at the roof of the house for a month with a fever. But all right. If I went in now, it'd be, I was happy to leave, put it this way, I was happy to leave Germany before October started.
There's another country you can scratch off your list. He's done with GB. But I was watching, talking about festivals, did you see that new Netflix series on Woodstock 99? You seen that yet?
No, I haven't watched it.
I saw another doc on it a couple of years ago, but festivals as a whole, just the concept, like when you're young, you know, you go there for 3 days, you get your tents, you know, you're basically locked in like this bloody musical prison. But the Woodstock 99 story is a classy. I think we spoke about it when we used to do Years Better Than 2020. But absolute
that's
train
a great
wreck.
Segment. What happened to
we
that?
Should bring that back. We've got to bring it back.
Should bring Legend and Ballin back as well.
Yeah.
I think that gets us in trouble, that one.
Yeah, but it's good, eh?
Yeah. But nothing like.
But that festival, like any time that you're having to rely on like Porter Dunnies, you know, like for 3 days, like by day two, it was an absolute train wreck. Mm. People like, you know,
I just read this this thing on like last week. I was just reading this like highlights thing from like the Reading Festival, and it was like the 10 worst stories. It was just people interviewing random people at the Reading Festival, and they were talking about like what's the worst thing that happened to you during Reading. And like two of the stories were somebody shat in our tent. And I was just thinking, like, fuck, there's nothing that, like, I don't know if a festival would have, like, I just couldn't think of anything worse. Waking up hungover and you roll over and someone's just shat in your tent and you're just going, another fall down the piss. You haven't had a shower. You haven't had any. Just think, oh, just too old. Just way too old for that.
Yeah, it's got to be our age because, like, it just, nothing about those week-long festivals appeals to me.
No.
Nothing.
Nah, not anymore, eh?
No.
Not even the fucking music. It's all shit.
Yeah. We're getting old.
Yeah.
You know when you're getting old is when you're driving in the car, and remember when you're a kid, you know, they'd have Gold 104, the hits from the 70s, 80s, ad today, or whatever. Whereas now it's like the Gold 104, the hits from the 90s and the noughties. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You don't hear songs from the 60s and 70s on the radio anymore.
Do you think that humans work like that? Do you think that we have like a rolling, like 30-year recognition
of relevancy?
Do you think it just rolls in 30-year periods? Although, do you think that that period in like the 60s, I mean, they will never die? You know, like the Beatles, Hendrix, Pink Floyd, surely that's immortalized. Or do you think that at one point that rolls over and then suddenly like Natalie Imbruglia becomes like a cult hero from the, you know, what we see as Fleetwood Mac. You know,
it's got to be on the mothers and fathers out there. Like it's like we're at a real tipping point now. We're the generation that has to. It's on us to continue it. Like if we don't
embroider, if we don't keep playing Backstreet Boys,
they'll die.
If we don't embroil our kids in that music. Then
we don't boil children. I think that what happened is my parents played the music of the age, you know. So my parents were playing Springsteen, Floyd, Led Zeppelin, you know, and I would therefore play the music of that age. So I would like to think that my kids will grow up to that same music and it would become immortalized.
Yeah.
But then at some point, it's just, I don't know.
I think the key will be. Because I'm the same. Like I listen to that music because that's what my parents listen to. So I don't listen to music of today. I listen to music of then. So when my children come along, when they come knocking,
talking about going down rabbit holes.
We need to explain to Sam how this whole thing works. Like the nuts and bolts, get down to brass tacks on the
I'll play the same music, but. The key will be just to like completely insulate your child so they're not exposed to the outside world. Don't let them listen to the radio. Don't send homeschool them. Don't let them socialize.
Well for social, like, you know, for making them be socially normal, just insulate them.
Yeah.
I was just reading the ins and outs of the Glory Vale cult is coming to light. There's this scandal in New Zealand now. And Glory Vale's this famous religious cult in the South Island of New Zealand, and it's always been a bit of like a talking point in New Zealand, a bit of a pillar of like bizarre things in New Zealand, and geez, it is a twisted place. Now it's all coming to light. Everyone thought like, oh, it's just like, oh, as the name says, Glory Vale. It's like this.
How do you describe Glory Vale? Is too close to Glory Hole. As soon as you said Glory Vale, I was like,
there's a real Joseph Fritzl vibe coming out of the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's no good.
How was the Deutschland tour, GB?
It was terrible for me. It was really weird. I went in actually confident. I was actually backing myself in to get a good result. And basically, it's just one hill climb, you know? And Adam was there, Yates. And I was like, right, I've just got to go all in to follow Adam. Because I, you know, in my head, I thought, you know, I've been riding pretty well last week. It's been going good. No, I thought, if I just hold on to him, I can at least get second, you know? Or maybe it could be a situation where he's already up on me from the prologue. Maybe I'll give him some pulls, stage, I don't know. Anyway, I talked to him in the stage and we would, you know, like, right, we need to go early on this climb because the hard bit was at the start and the last bit, the easy bit was like the last half was sort of like 5.5%, pretty hard to get away. And so we just went all in at the start, like absolute apeshit on this 30-minute climb. And after 10 minutes, we were just, I was on the ropes. But I was like, oh, I think everybody's really hurting here. So I tried this like stupid attack and then Adam went over top of me and I went all in, followed him. And then I just stopped. I completely stopped and in the middle of the road and I just couldn't hold on to any group, you know. And it was pretty interesting, like talking to like Noxie, who had a great ride, and he, you know, he rode it really smart and he got up to like fifth, I think, or sixth in the stage and stayed in the wheels. And what it made me realize is like, even at this level, one, you can never stop learning, right? You always make mistakes. You think, fuck, like that was such a, on hindsight, that was so stupid. What was I thinking? Why didn't I just ride it smart, stay in the wheels, go for a nice podium? Who knows? Or B, the level is still so high, even at like a small race, like Germany Tour. You know, you'd think the majority of the good riders right now are at Vuelta or whatever, but there's just no room. The level's so high that if you go, right, I use a little bit too much energy here or I went over my limit here, you get so punished. It's just everybody's so good now. Everybody can do 6.5 watts kilo for 20 minutes. Everyone can do this. And the difference is like, you know, everyone's like threading about bikes and equipment and this and that. But if you just like make a mistake like that, that's your whole race done. So in a way, maybe it's always good to get a reminder that you go, okay, pull your head in, mate, you're not. Don't get ahead of yourself and suddenly like being humble or at least being like scared of the competition in a way can sometimes get the best out of yourself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's just like you got, it's like about managing expectations in some ways, eh? Like, but like I was training with you for a few days before the German tour, and admittedly I'm probably not at my peak form, but like you were going fucking good. And I couldn't do your training. So like the expectation for you is I want to try to win the Germany tour.
Yeah.
You know, that was the expectation. And then how am I going to go about it? You know, am I in a position where you got to ride a little bit smarter? Am I in a position where I can blow people off the wheel straight away or what? It's just, yeah, about managing the expectation understanding the expectation and then managing how you're going to achieve it, eh? It's like
if I was going,
you say the level's so high.
Yeah, if I was going like a bit average in training and stuff, I'd go, oh, right, I probably need to just keep it in my pants here a little bit, you know, like just stay in the wheel, snibble around, and it's almost like, I think it's just sometimes you get ahead of yourself, don't you? And that's what happened, and it was particularly disappointing, really. So that's unfortunate. I think that was my last major hill for the year as well.
What are you doing, Jonesy?
I was going to look up the I forgot I was on the camera. I was going to look up the comments from the last video because I want to give away that jersey.
Oh, right, yeah. But I just wanted to like harp on your household for a little bit, George. Caitlin had a bloody epic weekend as well. Oh, ran 100K in Mont Blanc, 100K off-road marathon.
100K in a day.
What a machine.
A day,
in the
mate.
Mountains, bro. Not on the road. In the mountains.
6,000 meters insane. Of climbing.
6,000 meters of climbing in 100K.
I'll tell you what, you know how you always accuse me of saying I'm tired every time you ask me how I am? And I always go, oh, I'm pretty tired, man. I think that no one ever has a right to say they're tired unless they run 100K around Mont Blanc.
Yeah.
I looked at the people. I was watching insane. The live stream. So I was waiting for Caitlin to finish, right? So it was, they start at 9 a.m. and she finished at like, must have been about 11 o'clock at night. And I was just watching the live stream of these people coming across the finish line. And like, I can't even like, if you stand up on your legs for a day and you're at the supermarket or whatever, and you're like, oh, it looks pretty tight. And Megan running 100K or 6,000 meters, people were like crawling across the finish. And then there was another race where people run 180K.
Jesus, that's nuts. How do you train? Like, do you do like a marathon as a bit of a warm-up a couple of weeks out? Like, how many Ks do you have to do on
the
runner?
I think you can't train. I think if you genuinely train for that, like try and like replicate it, you just get injured. So I think you just go, I'll train as much as I can without getting injured. That's pretty much the threshold for runners. Like, they could train more, but they'll get injured. So they just go, I'm going to train as much as I can without getting injured. And then race day is just going to be fucking terrible. And like, this is what's crazy. She's like, oh, after 8 hours, I was feeling good, but I still had 5 hours left. And you just think, what?
That's insane, eh? She's a freak, man. She's a beast.
Unreal. No, that was a big
She's definitely the best athlete in your house. No doubt. I know.
She said she wasn't happy with how it went, though. So
just one last one from me. How much? How do you get the calories in during that day? Like, what are you pumping in?
I think she ate 100 grams an hour for 13 hours. So that's, imagine that's 1.3 kilos of carbs just in the race. That's a lot, eh?
It's actually impressive that you can do it. Like, on a bike race, I mean, it's easy for us to, in some ways, easy for us to get the calories in because we've got a car driving behind us. And you've got, you know, if you're a leader, you've got teammates that go back and get it for you, and you freewheel on downhills, which allows you to, you know, eat some food and stuff like that. But like when you're running, like I was following her as well, and like the stops were quite far apart. So
yeah,
you can't run with it. She's not running with a backpack on or anything, and like stopping.
Yeah, she is. She's got a vest. So you got like bottles here and here. It's like this, it doesn't look like a backpack, but it's like a vest, but it's sort of like a koala thing, you know, and you got like stuff in your front pockets and that's popping out. And Francesc was our Catalan friend was supporting her, like doing all the aid stations and stuff, and her team obviously. And so they just like swapping out at feed stations. They've got like, but I was watching Kylian Jornet, the guy that won the 180K race, and he was sitting down for like pasta and stuff. He'd run into the feed zone and like that was neck and neck with this guy. He'd run in, sit down, smash some like pasta, smash some like rice pudding, and then just like I couldn't imagine a side stitch. Just running there, just like I would have permanent side stitch if I did 180K.
Yeah. If I stopped for a pasta, I'd be like what you guys were saying about going back to bed. I'd just be gone. That'd be it.
You know how like you sometimes watch stuff and you're like, oh, I wouldn't mind doing that. Like, oh, cool, we caught it that one day.
Yeah.
I got zero feelings to do that when I watched the 180K Mont Blanc. I was just thinking like.
Imagine the people doing 180K. Like they get to their 100K, mate, and they go, oh, just over halfway. Sweet. Like, fuck that.
Yeah, I know.
That's insane, mate. I'm going to get into trail running when I retire. That's going to be my number one sport, I reckon. That and golf. I'm just going to play heaps of golf and trail run.
Yeah.
I've been playing a lot of golf, actually. And I'll tell you what, I'm not getting any fucking better. Like, I'm getting worse.
Like, don't take it out on those golf clubs.
Oh, mate. I played on last Friday, I played this really good course here in Spain called Emporta. It's like 15th best course in Spain or something. And it's, they apply to host a Ryder Cup and stuff. It's like real good course. Way above my level. Like I've come off par three pitch and putts, like rural.
We can really attack the pin because it just pugs.
Hadn't even used the driver. Hadn't even used anything bigger than a pitching wedge for the whole summer. I was like, I'll be all right. Lined up on the first hole, like 550 meter par five. I was like, how the fuck am I supposed to get there with a pitching wedge?
Did you play with Cam Meyer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
He was a good golfer.
And I played with him once when, remember we went for Green Edge camp. That was when you rolled your ankle on that kid's swing.
Oh, on the trampoline. Broke my ankle.
Broke your ankle on training camp on a kid's trampoline. But we played golf with Cam that day and he's one of those golfers. You know when you play with mates and you sledge them and their game just goes to shit? Cam actually plays better.
Oh, yeah.
Like the more you sledge him, the better he plays. So you just got to shut your mouth.
I played with Cam and Andorra. I played with Cam and Andorra in July, and we just played this like par three course, but like quite a hard one, and well kept and narrow fairways, and like, you know, a few technicalities to it. And I was playing good that day, and I was five shots up on Cam through the front nine. So you know me, I got fucking chirpy. I was like, yeah. Oh, I got down the ropes, Kazi, rah, rah. And I was even like, I even got to the point where I was like texting my mates. Like I text Hippy, like, mate, I'm five shots up on Cam after the front nine.
Yeah.
And he's like, be very careful.
Careful.
Keep your mouth shut, and you should not have sent this message. I was like, nah, what? Five shots. Not coming back from that. It's only nine holes to go. Beat me by six shots.
Oh, yeah. You only need to give Cam an inch. Like, we thought we had him and Lee Howard rolled onto the last hole. I think I was playing with Robbie McEwen, and he's a sledger. And we both worked out, nah, the sledger's not going to work here. Gets the last hole, and he nailed a 40-foot putt to sink us. Like, Cam pulled a fair out of his ass. You've got to give him that. But still,
I feel like that's how he wins nationals as well. When his chips are down, he's the last guy left in the group. You know, pressure on, everyone's racing against him, and that's how he's twice been national champion.
He's just so cool, eh? Like, he just doesn't change. Like, I saw him get frustrated on one hole, like, because he was putting like shit, but he was hitting the driver so clean. Like, if we played Ambrose, him and I, we would have been a good pairing, because I was sinking some 20-foot putts, and but he was hitting his driver so clean, but he was three putting every hole, and like, I just saw him, like, I was like, I saw Cam lose his cool. Like, he three putted and he picked his ball up and goes, Cameron. And then just walked off. I was like, fuck, he's lost it. He's lost it.
That's the equivalent of you like smashing your clubs and like driving the car trolley into the lake.
It was like, he just reached down.
Show of emotion.
He picked his ball up and he just whispered to himself, Cameron. Next hole straight in the middle.
I saw something on the Lad Bible the other day. You know when they post those just mates being dickheads to each other? Bloke was having a swing and his mate let one rip when he was at the top of his swing. And he just like hit it at right angles. Like, oh, piss myself. Because every bloke's done that as well.
I saw a great one this morning where a guy was running into bowl. And he's coming in like off a long run up. Pace bowler stops short and just down trails the umpire.
Yeah, so it's the Barmy Army posted that. I saw the same thing.
Someone sent it to us, actually. Someone sent Mrs. Josh with that video.
Oh, speaking of people sending stuff to us.
Well, just before we go, I saw in Lad Bible, man.
Just before we go, where are we going?
From this topic.
Oh. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, no, we're just wrapping things up.
Yeah, Welter looks good. Yeah, Remco's strong. Yeah. All right.
But I love the clickbait of Lad Bible when they put in like bold white text with like these mugshots. They had the mugshot of this guy who looked like, you know, he's struggling with drugs, and it's like, man sentenced for 34 months jail after farting in police officer's face.
So
I was like, you got to be pretty cooked to let one rip on a copper.
Yeah,
I saw the headline, but I didn't read it. But what was the logistics of that?
He got done for shoplifting or whatever, and I think he did.
Okay, but I mean, like, I'm just talking about logistically, how did
the bum and the face line up? I'm not sure. I don't think they went into it. Like, what was a policeman doing that close to that area for the guy's probably?
I just feel like...
It was clickbait, and I clicked it.
Suck in. Speaking of people sending in stories, social media, whatever, didn't we have some submissions? Didn't we have a bunch of... You sent me one of the most outrageous submissions I've ever heard in my life.
This is what we're giving away, lads.
Is that the one you sent me?
Oh, I don't know. That's what we've got to decide. So last week we've had this Alperson... There it is, Alperson Barbershop. You'll
on
see
Instagram.
Below. Instagram, Alperson Barbershop. They gave Jones this Tour de France edition shirt.
And they wanted us to give it away at the start of the tour because they gave it to me 3 days before the tour. And I said, yeah, no worries, mate. We'll come up with a competition.
Yeah.
Here we are, 2 months later.
We were far too busy blowing smoke up our own ass with trying to sell our merch. But we did get a couple submissions. Should we?
Yeah, go for it.
I'll find the ones that we got on the social media.
All right.
And
we had heaps, but there's no way we can read them all. But I just want to I think that my vote is for this the one where we're like, I can't remember how many fingers were lost, but
the metal one. Can't
read it. Yeah.
Well, there was two metalwork ones. Here's one from Linda Bauer. She said, the story that springs to mind from school where I work as a year 11 kid in metalwork who had been working on a metal mirror frame for some weeks. He just got it to the point where he was ready to put in the glass in the frame when the teacher finally realized that the mirror frame was in the shape of cock and balls. Must have been nearly a meter tall, needed to be hidden in black plastic rubbish bag to be carried across the school to the deputy principal's office. Sadly, I had no idea what happened after that.
No.
That's a good one. There's also the one about the guy. So basically the crux of the story is, if I remember correctly, is he chopped his finger off. Yeah.
I've got it. James McKellar, Bulsey. I went to Rotorua Intermediate, must have been 2000-2001. While there, the woodwork teacher had a yarn about some woodworking dude who went to brush away some sawdust from the table saw. Cut the tips off his four fingers. Then when he came back to work, he went to show his boss what he did and cut the tips off his other four fingers on the other hand. Anyway, while the teacher was telling this yarn, he then went and actually threw his fingers through the saw. Just a tiny bit, but quite a messy affair. That has to be bullshit.
There's eight fingers. There's like 12 fingers lost.
12 fingers lost there.
That has to be bullshit.
It's a massacre. It's a massacre.
Who cuts their fingers off while telling the yarn? Yeah, so like what he did is like it's not going to happen, surely. Then happens the final
time. I just can't believe that the guy went back and went, yeah, this is what I did yesterday. This is how I lost my four fingers and did it with the left hand.
Oh, that's pretty funny. That's
me the winner. I don't even care if it's not true. That's the winner.
There's one. Yeah. This one's from Sam Brown. He we had a relief teacher that used to park us in the AV room in the library and let us watch a movie. Lazy as fuck, but we loved it. At the time, the school had just bought their first VCR with a remote, a massive deal for us as 14-year-olds. This particular day, our relief teacher was an older bloke with proper Coke bottle glasses. He might as well have had a big fucking bullseye on his forehead. Game on. As we walk into the AV room, a kid swipes a remote and sits down in the back. Old mate teacher comes in, puts the video in the machine and starts trying to figure out how to get it working. The kid with the remote lets him go for a minute or so, then tells him the VCR is voice activated. Teacher looks confused, so another kid offers to give him a demo and says, play, at which point his mate with the remote presses play and the movie starts. We all start giggling and the kid at the front says, stop. His mate hits stops and the movie stops. Having had the demo, old mate relief teacher has to hang of it and says, play, but nothing happens. Try getting a bit closer, says the kid with the remote. So the teacher leans right up close and says, play. And through the marvels of technology, the movie starts. We all start laughing to the point the teacher needs to tell us off. He leans into the VCR, stop. And the movie stops. So he can tell us to be quiet and leans forward again, play. The movie starts again. We all fucking lost it. The whole class is pissing themselves laughing. So we need to be told off again. Same thing. The movie stops and starts on voice command. By the third time, the librarians outside the AV room are wondering what's happening. One of them comes in to see what the laughter is all about. And before the relief teacher can say anything, the kid down the front pipes up to explain the new voice that operated video machine. He does a demo again, and to her credit, the librarian played along with the joke. I'm not sure if the poor bastard ever worked it out, that it had all been a massive piss take. Whether he was left wondering why voice activated appliances never took off.
I just love the might as well had a big fucking bullseye on his head because he had Coke bottle glasses.
That's quite a good one.
That's fucking great.
We got one more submission as well.
Yep.
This is a tough one to read. Could have done with some paragraphs. talking of school woodwork classes, back in the day in 1976, we used to have this lad at school who always called us by our surnames rather like the teacher did, which wound myself and my fellow classmates up. Well, this guy was making a coffee table for exam work and spent a lot of time getting it just right. Unfortunately, he became unwell and was off school, which coincided with me wanting to make a fruit bowl. I got this idea to use the coffee table as a basis for the build. I used a table saw and cut the table up and glued and clamped it up, adding some lighter color wood for contrast. And the next lesson, I tuned in the lathe. The leftover bits I discarded when the annoying classmate came back to the class. He got very upset as he couldn't find his table anywhere. He asked the class where it was and they all looked at me. I was just waxing the new bowl at the time, and he came up to me and, yes, he used my surname and asked where it was. I said, I didn't know, but I asked him if he liked my fruit bowl. I still have that bowl now, and I must admit it was the nicest thing I've ever made.
Awesome.
Oh, good stuff.
And then the school burnt down, and then he sent another message saying, the following year, the school burnt down and all the firefighters in the UK were on strike. So he was making, at this time, he had a thriving skateboard deck business and he lost all his stock.
So who's the winner?
Well, I reckon the VCR one's pretty funny, or the fingers.
You can decide.
We'll find them, but we'll
go to a vote.
We'll find them both a prize.
All right. So you guys need to send us your details. And I'll put this in the post for you, mate.
Hey, speaking of merch, I think that there might have been a bit of an issue on a couple of Rogue T-shirts. I think a couple might have gone out with a bit of a reversal.
There's a small batch that's gone out. Our merch has been delivered, hats, T-shirts.
And thanks for everyone that's bought the merch, because we pushed it hard. And
and man, it is. I can't believe how successful it's been. But there has been a Rogue... A couple of Rogue ones went out. I think there might have been early sales. Yeah. So if you've got something that's backwards, you need to tell us. Please tell us, and we'll sort it out. Is that right? What's
backwards? There's a couple of Rogue T-shirts have gone out. That's people who have ordered the Great Bloke Shit Rider T-shirts that have turned up saying Shit Rider Great Bloke. If you like it that way, keep it. If you prefer it the other way, get in touch with us. And we'll sort it out.
But they're limited edition, those ones. It's like when you get like a base basketball card that's got like a misprint in it. They're worth thousands. So they'll never be printed again. No. So it's your choice. If you want to get a different one, your choice.
Hey, what do you boys think about the Vuelta? I haven't watched any of it. I've been away. But
well, Billy was on the detour this morning. Gave him plenty of notice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He left a live comment early on in the show, and I was like, oh, send him a link. He's up. But, the big standout's obviously Remco Evenepoel. Mm. Like, he's the classic example. Like, we're talking about old school with music and all that sort of stuff. There's that whole, and it's going to take a while to change, that notion of, you got to pay your dues. You know, if you're young and you're good, you've got to wait 2 or 3 years. Whereas these young guys are bursting on the scene. And with Remco, big tags early, you know, he's got his own clothing line and lots of pressure and all that. And then when he sort of dipped a little bit, he was only, 20 or still young. People like want to lay the boots in. And now he's showing shit. Hang on. He's fucking.
He's good. Real deal, eh? He's real deal.
Yeah. And I guess
I wish someone had said to us when we were young, like, We always were like sold this false thing, like, oh, don't worry, your time's coming, when you know, like, you've got time. 26, 28, 30, 35. That's your years. And I feel like a little bit of us put it in neutral in some way, because we got told that's, you know, what was happening. Sorry, I'm getting
just got massively distracted.
He was halfway through a sentence and then he got a text message. He's like,
oh no, I'm getting a phone call. Come on, Dora. Pause. I'm going to answer this. Hola. Si. Ah, ¿cómo estás? Ah, todo lista. Ah, perfecto. Ok, vendría en la. Hoy es lunes, ¿no? Sí. Ok, vendría esta semana. Perfecto, muchas gracias. ¿Y yo cuánto debo por la shock? Ok. Perfecto. Ok. Muchas gracias. Leo.
Just start your
pretty boys.
Just start your spill again. I'll go your full frame. So I think we got shortchanged.
What? What was I even talking about?
Just saying, when you were young, I think that we got sold a false thing of doing your apprenticeship sort of thing, you know, and we sort of parked it. Yeah, just started.
All right, I've been sidetracked, but okay. Yeah, I think we, oh, mate, I can't do this bit again. I can't remember what the hell I said. So I just fucking leave it. Just leave that phone call in. I don't care. People probably can't leave it. Just leave it. Thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, what you were saying, George, before you picked the phone up was like, yeah, we it's true. Like when people sign pro, like these days, people are signing pro when they're 19 years old. Or I think any of us has even signed a guy that's 18 at the moment for next year. And that, for starters, that never happened. You didn't sign guys at that age. Everybody was sort of expected to go and do a couple of years in under 23 before they went to the professional ranks. And then when you went professional, I think I was 22 when I turned pro. Even then, it was like, we need to give you a year, maybe even 2 years before you do a grand tour. You know, it's a big load for a young guy. Nowadays, they're sending 19, 20.
And we have a 19-year-old. We have a guy's coming fourth.
They're sending guys
like
the
Colombian guy.
Spanish. They're sending the USO.
Close.
Speak the same language. They're sending a 19-year-old USO to the Vuelta and going, try finish on the podium.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's a completely different ball game. And then like you get this, I mean, I guess I might be one of them that goes, the way Remco's riding is pretty, you know, I mean, he's not riding any harder than anybody else, but he's riding from the bottom of the climb to the top of the climb, full gas.
But the thing is, if it was, everybody's going as hard as they can.
Yeah, so
if
I know. Everyone's making the same effort, but the point I was trying to get to is that Remco's never finished a Grand Tour. He's never done 3 weeks of racing. Roglic and these guys have. So the question in Mark is, can Remco do this for 3 weeks? What's he going to be like in the third week? And I know that's maybe like a pessimistic view, but at the end of this, at the end of the day, like people only say that because we haven't seen it yet. But the bones and the structure is there for him to perform in the third week, absolutely no doubt. And I can't see him slowing down, and I can't see him being beaten in this welter. But it's still interesting.
I go, okay, he's going his speed up the hill, right, which is obviously outrageously fast. Everyone else is going on their absolute limit to follow him. So I would say that you could argue that the guy's losing 1 minute, 2 minutes, whatever, every climb, they're suffering more than him. So actually, like, I almost feel like the better you are, the easier it is. Like, he doesn't look like he's on his limit. I don't know. I think he
doesn't even look like he's touching the road.
Mm. Nah. Unreal.
Unreal. Like, and we were saying this on the detour last night, Jonesy, that Remco's pretty much always at a high level. You know, when he races, he's winning races. But I don't think we've ever seen him at this level.
I used to think that he was like good. I always thought he was good, but I thought more that he was extremely aerodynamic and had like a good punch. So I always thought like, oh, he'd get a gap, and then he was just so fast. You know, the bike he was on, his position on the bike, his everything. And I was like, oh, this guy's just got crazy speed. So I was thinking that's why he always goes 50K out, because he didn't back himself in to do 7 watts a kilo in a final or something. But now he's doing more power than anyone. It's just he's I think he's a completely different rider than what he was even 6 months ago.
Yeah. And another interesting topic that I brought up that you might be able to chime in with, George, is that we were talking last night on the detour about Jay Vine, and clearly his plan at the Vuelta, at the start of the Vuelta, was to lose time, which he did. He lost time in one of the sprint stages in Holland, sat up, lost 13 minutes or whatever, because he wanted to go stage hunting. And, you know, obviously if you're down on time, then teams don't have a problem with you being up the road on successful breakaway days. So he's done that, and he's won the first two hard stages in Spain, basically, back to back, boom, boom, two mountain top wins. And the first one he won from the peloton. He wasn't in the breakaway. He attacked from the peloton at the bottom of the climb. Okay, you can argue, they let him go because he was 30 minutes down.
Nah, but that, I think but that was that the physical performance of the year.
Exactly. I so even though they probably did let him go, but then what he did from that point to the finish line was he was the best climber in the bike race, you know, or equal best with
I would argue that was Remco. The best performance physically like numerically in the last, I don't know. I saw like some calculations that he did, like outrageous numbers. Yeah.
And then he
no matter what, he was winning that stage.
Yeah, exactly. And then he won again a couple of days later, doing some insane stuff as well from the breakaway this time. But then yesterday, he wasn't in the breakaway. He tried to go in the breakaway, got shut down. The teams like basically said, we're not letting this guy go in the breakaway anymore because he's at 6 minutes on GC. And that's like, it's a bit too close now with a guy that's climbing like a fucking animal. So we're not going to let him go in the breakaways anymore. So he sits up yesterday and loses 13 minutes. I reckon.
Why?
He should have just backed himself with GC now. Like the way.
Sure.
At 6 minutes. Good. Mate, at 6 minutes, he's only 3 minutes off the podium. And he's climbing as fast as Remco, who's climbing considerably faster than anybody else in the bike race. Like he has got 10 days of the welter to go where he, with his climbing abilities and what he's doing right now, he would ride himself onto the podium. But he sat up and lost time because he wants to win more stages.
Yeah.
Take your two stage wins. Fuck the King of the Mountains jersey off and go and try and finish on the podium at the Vuelta. That's what I would have done. But
the thing is, I've got no idea. I mean, I'm in no position to comment on this because I haven't watched any of it. So I don't know if that stage was like easy and then super hard. You know what I mean? Or as opposed to like...
The final climb was just like a wall. Super steep at the end.
But like, you know how there's like UAE races where like it's pretty easy and guys just have this incredible engine and do bullshit numbers and just kill everybody, or there's like the stages that like Pogacar wins, you know, which are just so hard, like 200k up, down all day, no one's got anything left and he's the only guy that's got something left. So like, you know, that's the kind of stages that come when you go to Sierra Nevada, when you go down to
yesterday was hard, really hard.
I got a question for you. His post-race interview, he said, that was the day that I'm so glad I'm not a GC rider with how hard it was at the finish. You know this, George. How different is it mentally? So you go into the tour and you go, well, the team says you're just going for stages or whatever, and you're in that mindset. You're just going, I'm just going for stages. I'm happy with this, and I like that, because how much extra pressure is it then if you're like, no, I'm going for GC. I'm going all chips in. Maybe for him mentally, he just goes, nah, this tour I'm happy with just going for stages. I don't want that day-to-day pressure of now I want to be a GC going,
But some people
maybe,
like it.
Maybe
people
it's a future
don't.
Plan for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people hate it.
I don't mind it. I don't find it stressful. I don't find like bunch sprints and crosswinds in it. I mean, of course it's stressful, but it's only stressful in the moment. I don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, fuck, you know. I enjoy those days, and then it gets stressful when I'm at the front. And some guys just go, this is fuck this, you know, and just pull plug in and get out of there and go, I just need to win a stage, pick a day. But like, I don't know, to be fair, I'd rather like what
just
he's
know.
Done already is
like,
you know,
I think
like he's,
I,
already,
like
he's already shown he's the biggest engine.
My opinion comes from probably some selfishness because I want to see what he can do. Like he's so good. And like, he's, you know, obviously everyone knows his background, that he's come from the Zwift Academy, and you know, he's a massive number cruncher, and he's had some success like in Tour of Turkey a couple of years ago. He went close in the Vuelta stage last year. And now he's you know, I guess he's had a couple of years to work it out in the peloton now, to work out how the racing goes. He's obviously quite technically astute as well in some ways, that he's picked those two stages that he won and said, I need to be in the breakaway, and he's made the breakaway, which is not easy to make breakaways on days like that. And then he's played the cards. Well, he won from the bunch the first time, but he's played the cards from the breakaway the right way to win the stage from the breakaway. So he's developed as a bike rider, as a whole bike rider. And I'm just so interested by him. Like, I just think that he's just come from this world that didn't exist 4 or 5 years ago. He's come from such a different pathway. He hasn't come through an amateur scene or a development program or anything.
We're going to see more and more of this. Did you hear about, I heard there's another guy that's even more crazy, like power-wise. And I think he did a stage with Quickstep, Osborne. Or maybe, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Jason Osborne, yeah. He rides for Alpecin.
Oh, he does now.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Did he stage with Alpecin? Fuck, I thought he went with Quickstep.
Jason Osborne. Everyone called him Jason Bourne.
Apparently, this guy is just shitting watts as well. absolutely shitting lots. Do you think it's like you learn to ride a home trainer, so you just have to be? It's actually the kind of training. It's like the guys that come off the track. It's like, you know, when Thomas and that come off the track, they just have that back. Even the Yateses, you know, they just have like that unreal engine that you just get on the track from just doing like VO2s, VO2s, VO2s.
Just shitting watts.
Like guys like Rowan and Durbo, like those two guys, man, you put them on a home trainer, it's insane what they can do.
Oh, like, yeah. Durbo insane. On a home trainer.
Yeah.
I remember those Zwift races and stuff. Yeah. 460 watts.
Oh mate, when we were in lockdown, and like Durbo would just be like, we'd be chatting on the phone. He'd be like, oh yeah, I did like an hour long time trial on the erg today, and like the nut, he'd tell me his numbers. I'm just like, fuck, man, I've just been on the couch watching Netflix.
Well, that's why he's not retiring.
Yeah, that's why he's way better than me. Different strokes for different folks, eh?
Yeah, you know, each to their own. Who are we to judge?
Yeah, exactly.
So where are you off to next, George? You go Canada.
Canada, mate.
Oh, fuck, yeah, I missed those trips. They were awesome.
And then I'll know today, actually, if I'm going to Australia or not for the Worlds.
Hope you got enough scratch for the flight. We covered that last step.
The what?
Scratch, coin, money.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That sparked the bloody Royal Inquiry into – I felt bad about that because then I got a call from a reporter asking if – I didn't want to, like, throw Bike NZ under the bus. But actually, no, they were just asking what the story was. But, maybe I'll go, maybe I'm not. I'll find out today. So it'd be quite cool.
I'll see you down there. Yeah.
Are you coming down?
Yeah, I'm going to Wollongong, yeah. Yeah, I'll be there.
Couch Peloton or
I'm going to be doing some stuff with Mitch. On the Sunday and then detour, yeah. That'd be good fun.
Oh, you going to church with them on Sunday?
Yeah. We always go every Sunday. So, it'd be good. I think it's one of those races where, like, cycling nutters know it's coming, but Aussies don't.
I reckon it'd be huge.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is it not?
Like, cycling people in Australia know, but, like, outside of that, it's only when they start going, what's this build-up, this bloody bike race? Yeah, it's sort of a big deal.
Well, they might go after that.
Yeah. When are they closing the roads, Jim?
They're closing them? Ah, fuck.
Yeah.
No, I reckon it'll be huge, man. Like, one thing I will say about Australians is, like, they know how to do sports events. And sports
Aussies fans. Love sport, hey?
Yeah, and I think it'll be huge. I think it'll be one of the coolest worlds we've seen since last year.
I think last year was when I think about it, it was like Worlds in Flanders.
I like how in every world sport there's always that one year that it goes out to the desert, like they do the Kashi.
Yeah,
like when that year went to Qatar and there's like atmosphere where it's just like people suffering like dogs, and then there's no atmosphere, there's a couple of crowd at the end, couple of dignitaries, and get in.
The worst, like the kicker for that Qatar Worlds, I'm pretty sure it was in like late October or something.
Yeah.
It was just some outrageous day. I was already home in New Zealand. It was like, I woke up in the morning, turned the Worlds on, just a couple of camels, just watching 160 guys lined out in the gutter. Oh, God, it was terrible.
Well, the FIFA World Cup's only a couple of months away. I'm pumped for that.
And you guys,
did you hear about this air conditioning scandal?
No.
Did you tell me about this, Bills?
I know about the air conditioning that you're not allowed to turn it on in Spain anymore, in hospitality.
Oh, really? Yeah, so what they said with the World Cup, I don't know how true this is. They were like, oh, part of the conditions about getting the World Cup in Qatar was like, you need to have renewable energy running the air conditioning in the stadiums because it's all closed in stadiums and, you know, they need to cool down. And, you know, we went to your solar panels. And I heard that they're like, yeah, and they put these solar panels. But then actually, like, a K away in the desert, there was just this whole generator farm, like petrol generators, and they were just running cables under the ground and the solar panels weren't hooked up.
Oh, no. But they're going to get to the point where they go, that's it, it's not renewable, switch them off.
Yeah.
People would be just sweating like pigs.
Speaking of sweat, do you guys get the podcast sweats? I get the podcast sweats real bad. I'm seeing you in your hoodie there, Jonesy.
Like, no, it's freezing here.
I burn through a t-shirt in an hour while we're moving to record.
That's just nerves.
It is nerves.
Remember when we first switched over to the DM network, we had to do like 3 takes because we all were shitting ourselves.
Yeah. I just
It's all been downhill from there, isn't it? We're just getting worse every year.
That's it.
Good hats.
Yeah, good hats.
All right.
Like, share, subscribe. What? Any admin before we go, Bills? We selling ball shavers still?
I don't know. You can still use the code, I'm sure. STP20 Manscaped. I don't know if we actually still got to deal with them or not, but fuck it, just try it.
They've been good to us. Keep me on it. The bunghole trimmers. All right.
Like, share, subscribe.
See you, boys.